So I'm Rick Hansen, and this is July 21st, 2010. And for the second take, we're going to talk about what's sacred and find a way to, in a sense, reclaim that word for ourselves, which has been, to some extent, sometimes appropriated by other people who act as if, I think, sometimes they have a monopoly on it. So we just shared with a partner, what is it to be, what does sacred mean to you? What is sacred? What does that word mean that's unique, distinct from other words like peaceful or beautiful or important? Okay, so what are some of the things you came up with as the meaning of the word sacred to you? I had a chance to meet with really nice partners, so we had some good conversations. How about you? What did you discover that word meant to you? Please.
Well, the first image in came up was the ocean and how sacred it really, 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 really is.
Thank you.
And yeah, and love and kindness and connection and community, that was sort of my main sacred.
Yeah, that's great. Other people? Linda.
Well, what I heard from Karen was not just things, but processes. Our attempts, our practices, our failures are sacred.
Yeah. Could you say, in a sense, what is sacred about them, in addition to other wholesome qualities they have of good effort and trying hard and grit and sincerity? You know, what is sacredness distinct from grit, sincerity, trying hard? What do we mean when we use that word in addition to those other good words?
Then for me, it's the consciousness or beingness that holds all of that. And when we're aware of that consciousness or beingness in everything, experiencing the sacred in everything, then we're in touch with that.
Thank you. I agree. Other people? There are others? Yeah, right there,
well,
you.
When you said the word sacred, what came up for me was the word inviolate, you know, what's not to be violated.
Yeah.
And what came up for me was I want my word to be sacred. Mm-hmm. So that, I know that it isn't always, but it's one of my aspirations that I'm very present and authentic and my word will be, in that way, true.
Yeah.
And the other thing that came up for me was my intentions, keeping them fresh and trying to live them every day, that was a sacred thing for me.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah. Great. Yeah, right there.
I was thinking of the idea of the sacred and the profane, the opposite being profane, and that doesn't mean sort of the usual connotation, but it just means kind of ordinary or banal. And sacred is something that opens up. It's like a state, or, you know, through ritual, through, you know, making something sacred, bringing a certain intention, you know, to the moment or, you know, to a space. And, you know, it's kind of invoked in that way. And you can kind of feel that quality. You enter the sacred, and then it's in relationship to the ordinary world.
All right, thank you. You better watch out. If you scratch your head, I might think you're...
So there was we had a discussion, and there was a sense of sacred. What occurred to me was some images as a boy, grew up Catholic, and maybe 0.1% of my experiences were actually sacred, where it was just full of love and benevolence for everything. And we talked a lot about space, especially our home, where a sacred space, home, could be, and should be anywhere, is where our most authentic beings can emerge. So there's safety, there's love, there's acceptance, there's a peaceful sort of relaxation available too.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Great. Hey, Bill.
I went ahead on a theme that I discussed before, having to do with specialness. And I I had a lot of trouble. I've learned a lot from you, all of you who shared so far that night. I think the most important thing for me to have said is that I find this really difficult to answer. And I think where that difficulty stems from is from what I've been learning primarily from you, but not only from you, here in over the last 2 or 3 years, and that is has to do with dualism. And if there's something special, then there must be a lot of other things that aren't special. And that didn't sound good to me. I think that I have to work on this art and to name some things and say these are special if that leaves out anything. Mm-hmm. So I think I've been coming around to Linda's thought pretty well. You know, I have a movie in our DVD player right now which is called Dirt, the Movie. And this is a film that will change your orientation towards cow dung and dirt. And I kind of think that actually that is sacred.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. That's great.
I may be finished, but I'm not, because I just learned that today is July 21st, right? And I thought it was not. I put a date on a sheet on the refreshment table asking people to, and one, we have one person who did respond. I put the wrong date on that. So it's the next day that we'll be meeting is July 27th, 8th. I think I put July 29th. That would foul up everything. Food on the table on next Thursday.
Okay, good. Thank you. Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, let's see. So, kind of a related question. You know, when you reflect on this topic, sacredness, the sacred, what is sacred? Or what does even that word mean, distinct from other words that are also, you know, benign? When you do that, what do you come up with as a reflection about the sacred in your own life? Particularly reflections around practice, like, is there a takeaway for you in terms of your own life and your own practice from reflecting on the notion of the sacred? Like, I'll give you a little example of that that came from the retreat I just recently did in June, where one of the main teachers, Ajahn Suchito, talked about offering our practice to the sacred. And he said, it's so interesting, very often we think about practice as something, or the fruits of practice we're getting for ourselves. And there's certainly a place for that. The Buddha was very straightforward about that, and he was looking to get something for himself in some broad sense of himself, right? But it's also very interesting to explore the notion of offering our practice. And what's that like? I mean, that movement of offering, including offering our practice so that it may be of benefit to others, or offering our practice as an offering to the sacred. You know, that's a term of puja, right? A guru for quite some time, and we would offer fruit, you know? We would offer food to each other. People offer things. I've done things in the wild where I offer things to the trees, if you will, and thank them for letting me camp there or stuff like that. There's a natural movement in us. There's a lot of ancient traditions offering, some of them, you know, sacrifices of goats and whatnot, still the impulse to offer. You know? So think for yourself, you know, what is your own offering? It reminds me of the Leonard Cohen lyric in Anthem. You may know that one. You know, he says, when people judge their offerings and think that they don't have good enough offerings, he says, forget your perfect offering. He says, ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. That's how the light gets in. All right. So when you reflect on this for yourself, what comes to you is, you know, your own relationship to the sacred, and maybe something about making your life and practice more of an offering to the sacred, whatever it is for you, and making more room for the sacred. You know, in effect, making more sanctuary for the sacred in your life, or resting more in the sacred, in moment-to-moment awareness, right? What do you see the question, the inquiry, the edge of that as well? And it's productive if it has a bit of an edge for you. What comes to you when you hang out in that growing edge? Linda.
So practice really helps sit in the sacred. But it seems like the real offering is seeing and honoring the sacred in the other. And even when that's hard,
yeah,
sometimes cow dung is easier than some of the people I have to deal with. So the practice is seeing the sacred in everything, yeah, and everybody, yeah, and honoring that.
Oh, thank you. That's very beautiful. Other people? Yeah, Karen.
So in line with that, in order to be able to do that, you said, what would I, for my practice,
yeah,
would need to practice more.
Yeah. Would you? Oh.
In meditation.
Okay.
To be able to stay more connected and to remember, yeah, that throughout the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, please.
Ruth and I were talking about sacred, and one of the things that Ruth came up was looking for opportunities to see the sacred. And I really like that. I'm going to put that on my refrigerator. And to take that one step further, looking for opportunities, looking for the sacred with intention, and without getting too attached to attachment, looking, expecting to be delighted, mm-hmm, unexpected delight. So that helps the staying power, and it reminds oneself that it is all there,
right,
and it's delightful. We have to slow down and look and expect to be delighted.
Right. Maybe one more person? Yeah, please.
I think the sacred part of it for me is dropping my ego-centered focus, whether you call it no self, or,
yeah,
coming to the selfless perspective, going to an old ancient church and feeling that I'm looking out at the sky and the stars are on the edge of the Grand Canyon, that,
yeah,
sense of awe. And perspective of how small I seem compared to the whole universe.
Yeah.
So for me, practice and sitting, I think, also brings that letting go of ego focus and more of the merging with the whole, or opening up the heart. And so the more I sit, the more that,
yeah,
extends into my daily life.
Yeah, thank you. You know, and in conversation with my partner, you know, what emerged was a notion of the sacred as something that is profound and precious and cannot be reduced ever to any collection of words. You know, words, gestures can point at it, but it's sort of beyond, you know, and that's part of what makes it sacred. It's forever, it's not beyond our reach, but it's beyond our grasp, in a sense. We can't grab it. We can abide in it and as it, but we can't grab it. And I think that's what we feel, you know, in those times. She also said something very cool for me about the sacred, in the presence of the sacred, to paraphrase, in the presence of the sacred, I'm not afraid. You know? And it has something about that as well. It's sanctuary. Mm-hmm. Sanctuary, sacred, sanctum, sanctorum, you know, all that. And that reminded me of something, an email exchange I had with a Christian minister who'd, I think, read my book and tracked one of the themes in it, which is about needless fear. The negativity bias from evolution gives us paper tiger paranoia, right? So we're afraid of paper tigers routinely because that's a great way to keep ancestors jumpy and alert in the wild. even if they're miserable and all have generalized anxiety disorder and panic phobia and PTSD. In any case, and he said it's interesting that in the, you know, the Old Testament and I believe even the New Testament, God is frequently represented as saying to humankind, be not afraid. You know that I am here. Be not afraid. I am with you. You are not alone. Be not afraid. So I think the sacred is, you know, one of those places where, you know, it comes up for us to be not afraid. I want to mention something practical and then move on to the kind of next notion I have, if you'll go with me on this little bit of a roller coaster here. You know, it's been, by the way, very valuable for me personally to, as a daily practice, say things in my mind. You know, take a vow or make a declaration or take refuge in ways that are very conscious and deliberate, and to have an overarching commitment to do that every day. Honestly, sometimes I remember to do it just before I go to sleep. Once in a while, I forget. Mostly, I do it usually fairly early in the day. And you might really think about doing something like that for yourself if you don't already. So I'll give you a couple examples. One is to declare your highest purpose, the most enveloping, overarching, fundamental, primary purpose in your life, whatever that is. It might be awakening. It might be having fun. It might be love. You know, you might say it as a sentence. It might simply be a word. It could just be an image or a feeling, a knowing. And yet, in your heart, there's a moment of recommitting. We recommit to that purpose, that calling, that aim. Right? That's one. Another is to make a declaration, for example, of things like, you know, I offer my practice today to the sacred, tell you my own, to my family, because they're the primary beneficiaries of dad's practice, you know, and husband's practice, but anyway, and to all beings everywhere. So you might think about that. You might think about just offering your practice daily or whatever moves your heart. I know for myself that I feel inspired and actually enlivened, not burdened, by making that offering. And you also might consider taking refuge every day in your mind in an explicit way. A simple statement, whatever that is, you know, I take refuge in, or I go for refuge to, or I abide in the refuge of, so that it's not dualistic, but it's present here and now, you are in true refuge. So, for example, in Buddhism, as you know, they're the classic refuges of the teacher, the teaching, and the community of the taught. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. There are others as well. Take refuge in reason, if you like, or take refuge in reality, or love, or emptiness, the elevator, you know, awareness, God, if that's meaningful to you. So think about that. That's been a very important, surprisingly, it's been like a sneakily important part of my own practice. I underestimated its power, but it's become a very important resort routinely. There's something sacred in that. It's a vow, in effect. It's a regeneration of a vow. Okay. So now, the next step here, aiming to an end at 8:30 if we can, I looked up the root meanings of the words of the word sacred, and very quickly it connects to another related word, holy. Holy. Not as in holy cow, Batman, but holy. And then I looked up the roots of the word holy, which are very interesting. They share the same roots with health. Hale and hearty, healthy, right? It's that which is most fundamentally healthy to us. And that's very consistent with a term the Buddha frequently used, which were the nutriments, the food, if you will. What feeds what? In other words, what feeds the fires of greed or hatred? Or alternately, what feels, and he used these metaphors of hot and cold a lot, what fuels the cooling shade of the overarching Bodhi tree, under which we can find sanctuary, sacred sanctuary and refuge, and, you know, nourish the conditions of our own awakening. Right? So, for a moment, I invite you to just reflect about, you know, one or two or three things that, if you just look at them, would be sort of the next step. In other words, in addition to whatever you're currently doing that is holy, if you will, that really, truly is the food your heart needs, right? Usually, within reach, there is a clarity that, you know, tell the truth, there's the next step. The next thing that would be for you a genuine and vital nutriment. Maybe it's doing a good thing more consistently that you're already doing some of the time. Maybe a key nutriment for your own practice, your own evolution, the next step in real, for real here, for you, is to stop doing something. For example, to stop needlessly worrying. That would be an enormous nutriment, you know, for the awakening of many, many of us, wouldn't it? Or a nutriment might be something like just simply, you know, spending more time with people or in places or in states of mind that really feed you from the inside out. We usually know when we're just quiet, you know, there's a voice of wisdom inside our head, our inner fairy godmother, you know, or our inner tough love martial arts teacher, or our inner Zen master who says, wake up, dude. You need to quit, and you need to start. That's my own version. Okay, so I also have a very nourishing feminine version as well. Okay, so you, think about your own version. What's holy for you? What would help you? So we'll just be quiet for a minute, and then we'll talk about it. Okay, so how about, if you're willing, in a moment, you get back together with your original partner, and remember who is A and who is B, and then say whatever you're willing to share with your partner. You know, don't breach your own privacy, but share whatever you're willing to share with your partner about your own reflections, and what you've seen here and now that would bring more of what's truly holy into your life. In other words, would bring more of what is the deep nutriment, you know, the deep fertilizer of the garden in your heart. Okay? Is that okay? Got that? And we'll do it kind of quickly. So grab your partner if you're willing to. You can always sit this out.